The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
And good evening, everybody. It's Manda Richard here, and tonight we're going to have a special treat. At the last minute, I emailed a Texas singer-songwriter named Rebecca Loeb and said, "Hey, you want to appear on the air? I really like your new record." She said yes. So you're going to start off by hearing the second track off her brand new record. Her brand new record is called Blink. It came out, I think it hit the stores and was available in late January. We're going to start off with the first song that she wrote on this record. It's one called Forever Young Forever. Here comes Rebecca Loeb on the Music Room. Rebecca Loeb, are you there?
Just just to catch you up, it's Loby, Richard.
Oh, Loby. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. Rebecca Loby. That's right. It's got an extra E at the end, which is very helpful if anyone's going to your website, which is?
RebeccaLoby.com.
Absolutely. So we just listened to Forever Young Forever, which is the I believe it's the first track you wrote on your new CD, Blink.
That is true.
And your website claims that the CD was inspired by mixtapes and the IRS. Okay, you got my attention.
It's true, it's true. So Forever Young Forever came to me one night. I was driving home from a gig, and I heard, I don't even remember what song it was. Let's say it was Tom Petty. I heard some Tom Petty song that I had put on about a million mixtapes in high school. And I just started thinking about how powerful songs are and how you can hear a song and be sort of transported to a different time in your life, like instantly. Like a song is sort of an invisible time machine. So then my mind just wandered until I had, you know, started working out the lyrics and the theme. And by the time I got home from that gig, I had most of the verses and a good chunk of the chorus for Forever Young Forever. And do you want to hear about the IRS component now?
You'd better. I mean, this is tax season after all.
Yes. Well, so I this is my 10th year making my full-time living as a touring singer-songwriter. And as you can imagine, my taxes are pretty weird. For the first couple of years, my dad helped me with them. And then I started hiring somebody. And the first year my dad didn't do my taxes, he thanked me. He said I probably added some time onto the end of his life by not having him deal with the stress of my taxes. So now I have a great tax guy in Austin. It's the guy who helped Willie after Willie got in all that trouble. You know, he's a legit music tax dude. And one day I got a very thin letter from the IRS. I was just home for 36 hours in between tour stops, didn't check the mail until I was on my way out the door. And on my way to the airport, I was reading through my mail and saw that I had an audit letter. And I was being audited, and it was just horrible. Just all the bad things you think it would be. And I talked to my legit tax guy, and he basically said, well, I mean, I stand by all my work. I will defend you if you want me to, but I think you can handle it on your own, and I've seen how much money you have, and I don't think you can afford to hire me to defend you. So he sent me in there by myself.
Oh, no!
I know. No, he said that his general rule of thumb is to never, ever, ever let a client in the same room as an auditor, but he thought that I was the exception to the rule, blah, 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 very flattering. I just really don't think he wanted to do it. But he did consult with me on his dime, which was nice. That's like how much he didn't want to deal with an audit, I think. And he sent me in there, and I was pretty, I mean, I'm a, you know, I was a straight A front row type A oldest student, you know, kid. So I brought all of that to the table preparing for my audit. I spent a few weeks that I had set aside for something else became audit prep, and I put together the most like Tracy Flick-ish audit prep notebook you've ever seen. I had a page for every transaction. It was all highlighted and hole punched and ready to go. So I walked in there, and my what was supposed to be my 4-hour edit audit took about two and a half hours, which was great. But during that 3 weeks that I was preparing for the audit, it was like a full-time job, and I was just sitting behind a desk, photocopying, highlighting, hole-punching, you know, going line by line through, like, every transaction I had made over the course of a year on tour, and it was a huge job. And while I was doing that, the only distraction I would allow myself was if I got a song idea, because I figured, you know, there's no business to audit if I'm not writing songs. So as a result, surprise, surprise, I became very inspired all the time to write songs. It's the only thing I'd let myself do besides deal with my stupid audit. So I got a lot of song ideas in that 3 weeks and a lot of songs written that ended up on the record.
Oh, that's a hilarious story. Now Becca, you started off in a different angle at the music because you were the second youngest person to be in your freshman class at Berklee College of Music.
That's
up
true.
In Boston, and you went up there not to study music performance, but
audio engineering. Yeah, that's true. Like I said, I was a mega nerd in high school, and I realized midway through my sophomore year that there was like a glaring loophole in the Georgia credit requirement for high schoolers, and that's where I was in school, and it was they set you up to graduate with 32 credits, but you legally only needed like 21 or 22. So by halfway through my sophomore year, I was like 7 credits shy of graduating, and I thought, well, I mean, high school is nice and all that, but why would I stay here an extra year if I don't have to? So I enrolled myself in summer school, took a couple extra classes just to be more eligible for college, and then my junior year became my senior year. So I graduated at 16. I would have graduated at 17 because where my birthday falls, but I graduated at 16. And then in August, I turned 17, and about a week later, I moved to Boston and started college.
How did you pick out audio engineering as what you were interested in? Because I think at one point, you were even thinking about doing soundtracks and soundscapes for videos and movies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I kind of went on a little journey with it. You know, at 16, 15, 16, when I was starting to envision my adult life, I decided that, you know, as much as I wanted to be a songwriter and a performer, that it would probably be a good idea to have some kind of fallback career. That was the public line, you know, that I told, you know, parents and teachers when I told them my plan, you know, that I wanted to get a, you know, a responsible degree so that I could have a, you know, so I could be employable when I graduated. Now, at 15, 16, no one told me that audio engineering is the kind of job that you need a fallback career for, not like a fallback career in and of itself. But the real reason, like between you and me and all your listeners, is that I wanted to do audio engineering is that I wanted to be a performer. I wanted to be a rock star. And in the late 90s, when I was in high school, there was like all of this pop stuff going on. It was, you know, sort of the emergence of Britney Spears and NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys and Christina Aguilera and all that stuff. And it was all very produced. And I had seen just one too many episodes of VH1 Behind the Music, and I was terrified that when I got my first major label deal, that I would go into the record studio and some evil producer would manipulate my sound and turn me into, you know, a bubblegum pop artist. Now, again, this is the twisted logic of a 15, 16-year-old. So that is maybe the main reason that I wanted to become an audio engineer, was so that when I found myself in that position, I knew what all those knobs did on the board and would not be manipulated in such a nefarious way.
Wow, that's quite a story. One of the things, though, I mean, we've talked about all this stuff that sort of surrounds the music. One of the things that impressed me about your new record, Blink, is the variety. They're also, and this I think probably goes to your audio engineering background, is it's like each track is different from the one before it. I mean, some have got almost a country vibe, some have got a pop vibe. There's one that I would swear would be something the Sultans of Swing would have done, you know? I mean, it's there's all this variety on your record.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. You know, each record I sort of go into with a set of kind of parameters that I'm following. And with this record, I really wanted to see how much I could do with the same five instruments, the same basic setup. So there aren't any horns or strings on the album. It's basically a five-piece rock band record plus a couple, you know, harmony singers. And within that, I wanted to sort of just see what different pictures we could paint using those same five colors, basically. And I think that comes mostly to the surface with the song Blink at the end, because the directive I gave my producer Will is that I wanted it to sound orchestral without using any different instruments. You know, I wanted it to sound like a... And one big reference for me for that song was Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms, which I think...
Yeah. I told you!
Busted!
You were busted there, girl.
Yeah, I admit to it. But what my reference with that song, besides the Amazing Thunder Collapse, which I didn't use, was that it feels symphonic to me, even though it's using the same instruments as the rest of the record, and it basically creates this like epic orchestral sound using a rock band, and that was one of my, you know, sort of main guides for that track. But for the whole record, you know, I'm really particular. I don't want the intro to any one song to sound like the intro to any other song. You know, I want it to be 11 distinct pieces of music that work as one cohesive album that you can listen through. That was my huge goal with this record.
But so many albums that people send out, particularly on the, you know, to quote folk DJs like me, it's the whole record sounds pretty much the same. But they're different tempos, different arrangements. It's really a cool record. Now, You were just talking about Blink, and we were talking about playing that at the end of the interview. So is that okay if we do it at the end instead of right now?
Absolutely.
And I'd like to play Smoke Signals because this one shows how you, unlike a lot of songwriters, managed to use some of the standard tropes, if you will, some of the standard imagery, and turn it around a little bit.
Can I tell you one little piece of trivia about where this song comes from?
Certainly. No one will know. So, just you, me, and all our listeners.
There are two songs on the record. This is one of them that came to me in my sleep in a dream. And I woke up in the middle of the night with the full chorus of this song, the Smoke Signals chorus, in my head, recorded it into my phone at about 4 in the morning, fell back asleep, and forgot about it completely for months, like literally months and months. And then I was with my good friend in Nashville, Jen Grinnell. She and I confided to each other that we were both interested in co-writing but scared to try it because it's intimidating. You have to make yourself really vulnerable to someone else, you know, to like sit next to someone and let them hear all the bad ideas you have to work through before you get a good one. So we decided to be each other's first co-write and to try it together. I've known her for years. And we locked ourselves in her writing room with a bottle of wine and each started going through our old notebooks, and I was looking through my phone for an idea to start with, and I found this voice memo that had a completely nonsensical title. It was like, blah, 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 blah. And I clicked on it, and it was this chorus that I vaguely recognized, but it was like my own muffled voice in the middle of the night recording it into my phone. So I played it for her, and she liked it, and we decided to use that as a starting point. And that's where the song comes from.
Well, folks, let's give a lesson to Becca Lobey and Smoke Signals here on the Music Room on WVUD.
Let's call it a night. Let's call it a draw. Let's call it a win for the quitter in us all. I've been watching closely, trying to see the ghostly shadows you left on my wall. But I can't read smoke signals, smoke. Smoke signals, smoke signals.
listening to us?
Becca Lobey and Smoke Signals here on WVUD's The Music Room. You were telling me that you, at 1 o'clock Pacific time, you just landed on the left coast.
I did. I landed in Los Angeles, California.
And so you're doing a big tour out there. When you tour, do you do it solo? Do you take the five-piece group with you? What do you do?
It's a mix of both. I'm playing about 45 shows this spring as part of the Blink Worldwide Release Tour, and I think 7 or 8 of them are with the full band. So it's just in certain places where it makes sense. I wish I could afford to tour with the band the whole time, but I'm a girl on a budget. And I like performing solo, actually, so it works out well. But for my hometown release tours around Texas and around Georgia, I did little 3-show runs with the full band. I'm playing a full band release show here in L.A. this weekend, and then and then the rest of the California shows are solo. And then next week I'll be all over South by Southwest, both solo and with my band.
Now, because I don't watch TV very much, I didn't know anything about your first claim to fame.
My very first claim to fame, yes. I was a contestant on the first season of The Voice on NBC.
Wow.
At that point, there's not much to say. At that point, I had already been on the road, you know, kind of like hacking away at it on my own for about 5 years. And I was invited by one of the casting directors to go audition. And I just kind of laughed when I got the email because I figured that, you know, it was the first season. So I didn't know what it would be like, but I did know what American Idol looked like. And I figured there was no chance they would put someone like me on a show like that because, you know, I play my dad's old guitar and I tell stories in between my songs. And I don't really write very vocally showy songs usually. But that didn't matter because it turns out they didn't want to hear my original songs anyhow. So I went to the audition just like figuring I might meet some people who work in show business that could, you know, maybe put my song in a movie someday or something. And I was really relaxed in the initial auditions because I just didn't think I had a chance on earth of getting picked. And I think it came across, like I was so confident I wouldn't get picked that it came across just as a confidence. And they liked what I was doing, and they flew me out to L.A., and I started to think, like, they might be serious about this. And one thing led to another, and I was actually cast on the show to do the blind audition. And even then, I was pretty relaxed because, I mean, I was scheduled to leave for my first ever tour in Europe the day after my blind audition filmed. So I went on stage for my blind audition thinking, like, well, no one's going to turn around, and I'll just leave this weird place and catch a flight to Amsterdam and go play 3 weeks of gigs in Europe. Like, that's not such a bad plan B. But then a couple of coaches turned around and I saw a chair start to spin in slow motion. Do you know that reference? I know you don't watch TV.
I don't. I think that what happens if they like it, if they like it or hate it, they turn around and look at you?
No. They don't turn around if they hate it. It's just if they like what you sound like enough to want to work with that voice they are hearing, then they push a button and their chair spins around. And then if you're on the team I don't need to go too much into this, but if more than one person turns around, then you get to choose between celebrities. And it's like very quickly goes from being like desperate nobodies hoping that just somebody, anybody, please, for the love of God, turn your chair around, to being like, I don't know, Adam Levine, what have you done for me lately? Because you're like picking between multiple celebrities. And it was especially interesting on season 1. I might get in trouble for saying this, but these are all people who have been famous. They're basically children, and they're not really used to being evaluated by unproven amateurs. And it was really interesting from my perspective watching them deal with that. And
the
they
other
got
contestants,
better, I think, at dealing with that as the show wore on. But in season 1, it was kind of new for everybody. But I had a choice between Christina Aguilera and Adam Levine, and I chose to work with Adam Levine, and I made it another round, and then I got sent home, and then I went back out on tour and tried to exploit that opportunity as much as I possibly could. I got a manager and a booking agent, and I've been on the road for 5 more years doing pretty much what I was doing before, just slightly larger venues and with a little bit more press coverage, which has been nice.
You have so much energy. I wish we had another half hour to talk some more, but Well, we'll have to. I'll have to now that we've met. I'll have to try and rope you in another time here on WVUD.
I would love that. Well, I'll be out with my family over the summer. Maybe we can work something out.
Cool. Well, let me say we're going to play now the title track from this new record of Becca Loeb's.
Yay.
Blink. And it's by popular request from Becca Loeb herself.
Tell a popular request by the artist. Yes. Play the longest, slowest song on the record.
So, Becca Loeb, tell us about this track, then we'll let the folks hear it before Sarah comes in for all tomorrow's parties.
Sure, definitely. This is the title track of the album, and the basic concept writing it was just about, well, it was inspired by a night that I was playing darts with a friend of mine, a great musician named Ryan Colwell. I was in Nashville. We were playing darts, and he said he took 10 years off between albums because he needed to go live for a while. He had been on the road nonstop for years and years and got to the point where he didn't know anything about life beyond being on tour. And that resonated with me on its own because I've been touring nonstop for 10 years. But then he looked me dead in the eye and said, if you are writing road songs, like I'm a, you know, modern cowboy and on my iron horse I ride, blah, 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 you need to evaluate your freaking life. When he said that, my blood ran cold. I have written a road song or two, let me tell you. So the setting of the song is me in that bar with Ryan. Now, the personal relationship in the song is not my relationship with him, but I just wanted to sort of pay tribute to that moment because it really did have a big impact on me. And then production-wise, we always knew it was going to be the last track, and we had every musician who came to the studio to play anything on the album take a pass or two at it. And we didn't prep them. We didn't send it to them in advance. We just, like, played it through once or twice for them and recorded what they did along to it. And we wanted to give everyone who played on the album an opportunity to make a final statement on the record. And then the producer, Will Robertson, who's a mega genius, took everybody's contributions to the song and wove them together into this beautiful collage at the end that I just love.
Well, Rebecca Loeb, this is the first interview I've ever done where we talked about darts, Dire Straits, and The Voice.
I'm here for you. Call me anytime.
This has been absolutely great. Okay, folks, here comes the title track to Becca's CD, Blink.
Time in my footsteps. closing down now, it's last call.
You're listening to WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.